On page 286 on the top numbers, which is page Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Beis, in the middle of chapter 26. In the Hebrew, it starts Achba Emes right in the middle of the page. And on the English, it's But in Truth right on the top of right column. The letter starts out with a statement that now we are under the dominion of the tree of knowledge. When Mashiach comes, we'll be under the dominion of the Eitz Chaim. And that's why it is that since we're under the dominion of the tree of knowledge, it is that the Talmid HaChachamim need the Amar Ratzim, whose lives are under the dominion of the tree of knowledge, to support them. And about that, he asked three questions. He said, wait a minute, how could you say that the learning of Isser and Heter, etc., is under the dominion of the Eitz Hadas, when it says in the Torah, Beferesh HaPasuk Eitz Chaim Hilu Machzikim Bo, it is the tree of life. Then he asked another question. But the Rashbi spent his whole time in the cave over there, he was learning Halacha, which involves Isser and Heter and Kosher and Pasul, etc., which are all things under the dominion of the tree of knowledge. Because he says it would have been just doing the Zohar, which is in the stars, are called the Eitz Chaim, so that would have taken him a couple of months to knock off the whole thing. So for the most part, so he himself spent most of his time, his 20 hours a day, learning was spent with what he refers to as the Eitz Hadas, not the Eitz Chaim. And then he asks another question, just pragmatically speaking, is that for the most part, the great scholars did not require any financial help from the ignorant masses is because they had their own estates and they were quite wealthy and did a lot for the economy themselves. And yet they dedicated their whole lives to Torah. That's where we left off last time with the questions. And since it's here, everybody's here, so then it says that generally when you're learning philosophy is you shouldn't end with a question because you're afraid that people are going to give up Judaism because they can't figure the answer. But since you're all here, so I assume then that you didn't bother you that much. Mm-hmm. And maybe you even actually thought about it sometime since the last class. Okay, so now, but ach be'emes kishvedaktik v'loshen raya mehemna. But if you read the words of the raya mehemna very carefully, we're going to answer these questions in order. We're not going to get through because we still have another 6 pages of this chapter. So you'll see the ilana de tevara de ihu iser v'heter kolo. It says that the tree of life, that these are forbidden and permitted things. V'lo amar teiras iser v'heter. Halachis iser v'heter. It doesn't say the Torah of prohibited and forbidden, or the halacha of forbidden and forbidden. Because Torah is Eitz Chaim Yimachzikim Bo. His supposition is, what are you talking about? The Torah is called the tree of life. And as the answer to that one is, yes, you're right. The tree is the Torah of life. And what we're talking about in the Raya Mehemna is not the learning about things which are permitted and forbidden as being under the dominion of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, but the things themselves. Because, of course, everything in this world is now governed by the tree of knowledge of good and evil. There is not a whole lot in the world itself proper which is governed by the tree of life, because those things would be living forever. So since nothing lives forever, everything is decomposing and falling apart, at least falling into a state of entropy, so therefore everything in this world is under the dominion of the Eitz Hadas. Ella Ratzel Leimer, he means to say, the goof davar ha'aser, the thing itself which is forbidden, or davar ha'moter, or the thing itself which is permitted. Hu me'ilana de tevara, that's from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Shehu klippas noga kamoshu v'vore v'Eitz Chaim, which that's explained in Eitz Chaim, that's klippas noga. So everything, even if you want to say that's like, for example, the energy is a constant, but
it's still a
constant. Energy is in a constant state of movement. Yeah. Water evaporates and the things settle out of it. It's it comes back, it goes up, it goes down. That's a whole water cycle thing. It's not a constant. It's in a constant state of change. So that means it's not eternal. Because eternal means that it stays the same, like, forever.
I'm going to say something stupid, but I think about the spaceships where they go up with a certain amount of water, and they keep that amount of water, and they go back down with it.
That's because they're drinking their purified urine, but we're not going to talk about it, so...
They have to. It's like they...
Fine.
This doesn't... I'm just curious. I'm trying to think, is there anything that Shem gave us that is kind of permanent, more permanent, that...
There is nothing eternal.
Not in creation.
No, there is nothing eternal in the creation. He has things that are where the word eternal is used as a like an adjective. Like it says, the sun is nitzchi, which means it has eternal qualities, right? Because the sun is not going to burn out. Okay, the sun, the sun will continue to shine until the end of time. Okay, and as soon as time stops, the sun stops.
Well, you
because that's the way it's created. It's created right now that as we look at it, it's eternal. But it's not really eternal because creation is not eternal.
And it's shrinking.
Right. Even till 93 says that the world is firmly established and won't falter. That's an answer to all the Oppie chorus about the... EPA and all that jazz. The world's being destroyed because it's not going to happen. But it's still creation. It'll only last till the
show stops. Till the show stops, exactly.
Right. Which we say in the morning broadcast anyway.
Right. So. Okay. So therefore, the world is underneath. So that's Klipas Noga. Klipas Noga does take up a big part, even though it's debatable. I mean, if you're talking about quantities of stuff. I don't know if anybody could actually sit down and figure out which things are more Klipas Noga, which things are more Shalosh Klipas HaTemeis. And even those things which are Shalosh Klipas HaTemeis really are only forbidden to be eaten. Unless it's forbidden to have benefit from it, which the things that are forbidden to have benefit from are Chametz on Pesach, which all you got to do is wait a week.
Right.
Wine which is used for idolatrous libations.
Right.
And milk and meat that's cooked together. Those are the only things that are forbidden to have benefit from. But everything else you could have benefit from. You could use a pig skin.
Gold that was part of it, used in idol worship, you're not allowed to have benefit.
Right, okay. Idolatry.
So anything that was involved in idolatry.
Anything with an idol. But the thing itself is interesting. I'm talking like a pig.
Right.
Okay, a pig you can't eat. It's Shalosh Klipas. It's a maize to have ham. Okay, but to wear hush puppies, which are made of pigskin, no problem.
Have a guy stay.
So then the pig skin,
right,
unless you start chewing on it, is going to be Klipas Noga.
So they're going to do a bypass like they did.
Yeah. Pig porcine valves and porcine. Yeah, absolutely 100% fine. So that means all those things are under the dominion of, so it's the very same thing. Right. If you could figure out soap made out of lard, is permitted to be used. Tallow candles are permitted to be used. Okay, it does say, and since we're getting close to it, it does say that when you're using, when you're doing Bedikas Chametz, it says you should not use tallow candles because you're not going to check your pot so good, because who wants to drip hot, burning fat that's trafe
into their pots. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so which means that you could use a tallow candle for something else. Shabbos, no problem. Okay, because you're not eating it. That's the only criteria. To stick the candle in your mouth and start chewing on it, you wouldn't be allowed to do.
No problem.
Okay, but to burn it, no problem. Okay, so the world then, for the most part, and if you're looking at it, that aspect of it is probably more Klipas Noga.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay, and then that makes sense, is because we talk about before, it's mentioned in Eitz Chaim, and brought it in the letters a couple of times, it's brought in the first part of Tanya a couple of times, that Klipas Noga is the intermediary stage by which Chayas passes from Kedusha to Shalosh Klipas HaTemeis. Okay. And so how is it possible to do it? Because there's a whole lot, Kedusha, we know is Kedusha. That's pretty intense. The Klipas Noga is just so much that it's able to channel the little bit of godliness needed for the sustenance of Shalosh Klipas HaTemeis. because we said it last week, the amount of godliness which is involved with creating things which are unkosher, etc., is very, very little. That's what we call it, a klippa. It's just a skin. It's a shell, like a helium balloon.
Right.
Okay. How much helium is in a helium balloon? Not a whole lot. But yet, the helium balloon takes up a lot of space when you blow it up.
Right.
Okay, so it looks like it's a whole lot, and it looks like evil has the upper hand in the world, but it's not that way. Okay, as he says, v'zehu lashon usser. That's what it's called when it says it's usser. It's forbidden. That the word forbidden, he said this way back in chapter 7. Shehaklipa shura alav, that the forces of evil rest on this item, ve'ena yachala oilus lamaila kedavra mutter, and it cannot be elevated like something which is permitted. Dahainu she'ena kosher va'asa beklipa, meaning something which is permitted is mutter. The word mutter means untied or released. And it's not bound in the, or tied down in the forces of klippa. And it's able to be elevated when a person eats that thing with a proper kavanah of serving Hashem. No, he doesn't say uses that thing, he says eats that thing. Okay, because that's where we're really going to have to differentiate the difference between klippas nogah and shalosh klippas tameis, is if you could stick it in your mouth or not. Okay, so the I was going to comment on something about any yachal alus lamaila v'davar hamutter. What was I going to say? So this thing then, which is under the dominion of the forces of evil, is not elevatable through us eating it.
Right.
Okay. Or in various situations which are prohibited by Torah, are not possible for us to elevate them.
Right.
V'gam stam, kol adam ha'ovir ovid Hashem. And generally speaking, any person who's serving Hashem, shebekeach achilo ha'hi, which is derived from the caloric energy from that food that he ate, lo'imed u'mespalala Hashem, he's learning, he's davening to Hashem. V'nimsa shenasa isi yisatara v'hatfila ha'ila la'Hashem ekayach ha'nizvar mehamaychal. So what happens is that the letters of Torah and davening rise up to Hashem because of the strength which he purified from that specific food. So that, if a person's eating, he talks about this in second chapter, like you were rehash of chapter 7, chapter 8. If he ate with the proper kavanah to somehow serve Hashem, Finman's famous 5-second rule to holiness, why do I need to eat this? And if I cannot come up with a good reason to eat this, then I cannot eat it.
Probably put it back on the
But box, if I do need to eat it, then I have a very good reason why I should eat it, and therefore I should eat it.
Yes.
Okay, because I'm using it to utilize to make the world a better place, and that's all very well and good. So what happens then is when the person actually goes and studies and learns, I'm doing this in order to be able to have the strength to study and learn and to go work. So when the person actually studies and learns and goes to work, so then the vitality which is contained, the chayas, the spark of godliness which is contained in the food that he ate is now elevated, and he's fulfilled the purpose of the creation for that specific thing that he ate, and that whole species, and he himself. And this is required b'zehu b'chol. This is what you got to do during the week, okay? Because it's harder. There's a way around this. Because you say next thing Shabbos, it happens by itself. There is a way in which a person that we talked about now is called l'shem shemayim. He's eating l'shem shemayim. Okay, it reminds me, there's a famous story that Avremel Lipsker loves to tell. It's one of his favorite stories. It says a guy goes to some Rebbe, I don't remember which Rebbe it was, and says he wants to know, how does one eat L'shem Shemayim? Okay, so the Rebbe tells him, listen, there's a guy in such and such a town, located someplace east of Grosse Pointe Farms, and you'll go watch him. You'll see how to eat L'shem Shemayim.
Okay.
Okay? So he goes, he knocks on this guy's door. It's a pretty well-to-do guy. Mm. Okay? And this guy just kind of like lumbers over to the door. This guy is what would we refer to as a ball buster. He, corpulent would be a compliment. This guy was hefty. Okay? So he said, so-and-so Rebbe told me to come over here and stay at your house. He said, so fine, you're my guest, wonderful. Okay, so he sees for supper, this guy's like sitting, he's just chowing down. It takes him like an hour to eat supper. He's just like nonstop shoveling food in. And he's just this person watching, just appalled about how much, the massive amount of food that this guy ate. So after, I don't know, at some point before he left or some of that, or whatever, he said, I don't understand something. He said, what's the problem? He says, I went to the Rebbe to find out, how does one eat L'shem Shemayim? And the Rebbe sent me here. So he said, tell me your story. What's the deal? Why do you eat the way you eat? So he said, well, listen, it's like this. He says, when I was a young man, the Cossacks came through our village, and they chopped my father, and they tied him to a pole, and they set the whole thing on fire. And my dad was a little skinny pickle. And in 1, 2, 3, he was gone. Says me, if those Cossacks ever come back again, and they chop me, I'm gonna spit, and I'm gonna sizzle, and I'm gonna burn, it's gonna create a smell. Says that's why I'm eating the way I eat. Okay, so it's not like I said, it's not one of those happily ever after stories, but you get the idea. He was eating not to fulfill an animalistic desire. He's eating because he wants those Cossacks to know that he's a Jew, and this is what happens. Okay, so we call that eating L'shem Shemayim. Okay, I never told you that story. Never heard that one.
I've heard the story, but I've never heard it. But
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I heard it from.
We haven't heard it here, but yeah.
I've heard it from Avraham Lipsker 3 dozen times, maybe 4.
Yeah.
So anyway, it is possible. There's another way of serving Hashem, is b'chol derechecha de'ehu, which means in all your ways you should know God. That it should be apparent that you are serving Hashem by the very act. Not that I'm doing this in order to do something else, but this act itself is a way of serving Hashem. Now, he's going to say right here, the easiest way to do that is on Shabbos. Okay, Shabbos is a mitzvah to eat, a Suda's mitzvah over there, all the different Suda's mitzvahs. You go to there, you eat, you just stick the stuff in your mouth with some sort of a monarchum of understanding that I'm doing this because this is my Suda Shabbos, and voila, the food is elevated. Okay, and it happens, this is aim, because it says, Borer is Aser B'Shabbos. One of the 39 malachas on Shabbos is Borer, is taking the bad away from the good. And so therefore, what is a person doing the whole time during the week is biror nitzutzos, he's removing the sparks from the world. And so there's no need to do that on Shabbos. You don't have to do this avoda of separating the good from the bad. That happens automatically on Shabbos. Now, if a person is in tuned, they can do that during the week. What that means is that, it's very hard to explain, because I don't do it, I'm sorry. I haven't figured it out yet myself. Is that the eating now, during the week, takes on an expression of serving Hashem. The Rambam writes that how do you know if a person is a chacham? This is in Mishneh Torah and Hilchos Deos. This is not, by the way, that he learns or davens, because you take any yold, you'll put a talus over his head, give him a sitter, and he'll start shuckling back and forth. He'll look pretty like a holy dude. Okay? So that's not the litmus test. The Rambam says, how do you trust if a person is a chacham? Is by the way in which he speaks and the manner in which he eats. So that by looking at this person eating, even during the week, you should be able to see that this person is serving Hashem by his eating. That would have to mean that, so what's the person thinking? I'm not sure if the person's thinking anything or what the person is thinking, but it's apparent the fact that he is eating, his eating itself is a service to Hashem. Okay? Like, for example, that guy who was eating so that if the Cossacks ever came back, he was eating to serve Hashem. The eating itself became the mitzvah. Okay, I wouldn't go that far.
His intent is his intention
is with the eating, not with the not that the eating is for something else.
Cognizance is constant.
Correct.
Okay. It's not intermittent. It's not
right, and it's not. I'm not doing this for something else. This
I'm doing
itself
it now
is
as
serving.
An avoda.
I am serving Hashem by eating.
Yes, I'm doing this as an avoda right now.
Yeah, the Hagas Hasidim are very much into this.
Hmm.
All the world's Hasidim out there, they're into like, you know, grabbing for Shirayim and stuff like that, and eating itself is a way of serving Hashem. You know, because it says, you know, by the Bris Malach Kodesh that we had last week, it talks about God made a covenant with the salt, and that goes back to the second day of creation when God separated the top world water from the lower water, and the lower water said, what do I have to be the lower water for? And Hashem made a covenant that on every sacrifice there'll be salt, and once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, there will be salt on every Jewish table. Okay, as part of this covenant. So that means, it says, Zeh Shulchan Alai, you know, this is the table that I'm sitting at. Our table becomes the Mizbeach itself.
Right, exactly.
So that means that the very act of eating takes on carbon-like qualities.
It's supposed to be an avoda.
Okay, so it's not that I'm eating. So when a person offered up a sacrifice, it wasn't just in order to do something else with the animal. The animal's getting burned. The animal itself was the avoda of Hashem. So the eating itself has to take on that type of a thing of avoda. That's called b'chol derechecha de'ehu. In all your ways, you should know Hashem. You should see Hashem, and it should be apparent even to others that this person is serving Hashem by doing this mundane affair, by engaging in this mundane matter.
Yeah.
So he says the easy way, of course, is Aviv Shabbos, and Shabbos is very easy. Sheyesh Aliyah leklipas noga ba'atzmai, because klipas noga itself on Shabbos is elevated to a higher place. Famous story involving the Rebbe Rashab when he was 8 or 9 years old. Okay, came back from school, from a cheder, and he's complaining to his father, the Rebbe Marash. Okay, what's he complaining about? My teacher hit me. Okay, so it says that in guys with the old school, that when the father heard that the teacher hit him, so the father went for his belt.
Right.
What did your teacher hit you for? Okay, so he said, we're learning a Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos. And the Mishnah says that if a person gets lost in the desert or the wall, in a desert or a forest or at sea, and loses track of the days, he has to count 6 days, and the seventh day is Shabbos. Okay? So the father said, when the Rebbe told it to me, when my teacher told it to me, I didn't understand it. I said, I don't understand it. So he repeated it again. And I said, I still don't understand it. So he repeated it again, and I said, I still don't understand it. And the Rebbe hit me. So the father asked, what don't you understand? You said the Mishnah perfectly. So he said, I don't understand how a person could lose track when Shabbos is, because on Shabbos the rocks glow. Okay, this is an 8-year-old kid. Okay, what was he seeing? He was seeing this elevation of Klipas Noga. Listen, Rebbes aren't made, you know, so you know, there's no Rebbe school of Rebbes, you know, Rebbe University. You graduate when you get a position as a Rebbe. Yeah. Yeah, no, it doesn't exist. So even as an 8-year-old.
Fortunate for us.
Yeah, even as an 8-year-old, I wouldn't want to know who graduated last in that class. No. So it's apparent the physical world is different on Shabbos.
Yes.
I can see, me personally, and my general rule is if I can appreciate it, then it's no big deal. I know that if I have problems, I'm learning with something, learning something in the middle of the week, a piece of Hasidus, a piece of Gemara, something, whatever it is I'm having to learn, and it's not going into my head. It says, if I learn it on Shabbos, the very same piece that I tried learning, I could try learning it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
It'll come
It's not going to Shabbos. It goes.
It'll come to you. Right.
Okay, why? Because the physical world is on a higher level, even my physical brain, which is, right. If you analyze my physical brain to be an inanimate object, yes, we know.
Don't do that. So, don't do that.
Worry, I don't want to worry.
Don't do
yeah.
that. Don't do that.
Okay, but ask me. V'ima chaseniyah shebechola olamos, and it is true with the chaseniyahs of every world, the whole entire spectrum of creation is elevated on Shabbos. Therefore, it's a mitzvah to eat all kinds of delicacies on Shabbos. It's interesting things. Laharbas bebasar v'yayin, to eat more meat and wine. Af shebuchol nikra zolo v'seva. Even though if you were to eat on Shabbos, the way that you, if you're eating out during the week, the way that you eat on Shabbos, you would be called a glutton and a swillard. But on Shabbos, why are you doing it? You're doing it because it's a mitzvah to do it.
Right.
Now, there is one caveat there, is you have to have some kind of an awareness that yes. the reason why you're eating this is Shabbos.
Right.
Because there is a famous story, the Baal Shem Tov, that yes. someone said, but you can eat anything you want on Shabbos. And the Baal Shem Tov said, come with me. And they went through the back alleys of Mezhebush. And they came, they looked in a window, and they saw a guy who was sitting there eating chalent. And he was wearing a strimal and a bekesher, and he was eating chalent. And this guy looked like a cow in a strimal and a bekesher, because he was so into the chalent that he became the chalent. He wasn't eating it l'kavod Shabbos Kodesh, he was eating it to fress. And even fressing on Shabbos, or fressing even on Shabbos, is also not good. So the person has to have some inkling in their mind, why am I eating the way that I'm eating is because it's Shabbos, Yantav, Asudas, Mitzvah, V'chulu, etc. That's this interesting thing, the word oineg. Okay, you're talking about delight, that we see that Shabbos is oineg, so that in itself, oineg stems from the inner level of Ratzin. So Shabbos comes from the Pnimius of Kesser. That's fine. That's all very well and good. Okay, but if you analyze in the word oineg itself, oineg is three letters, ayin, nun, gimel, and it's abbreviation for Aden, Nahar, and Gan, which are the three levels that Adam Arishon was privileged to before he got kicked out. He was put into the Gan. And the Gan was sustained by the Nahar Sheyotze Me'Eden, from the river which flowed from Eden. And so there's another level called Eden. And Adam was told that if you're a good boy, when it'll come Shabbos, so you'll be let out of the garden and let into Eden. Which meant that he would be able to us to appreciate. Eden means ma'adanim, is the word, comes from delight. So it's the ultimate level of tainug, of Hashem's tainug. Nahar would therefore be the would be bina, understanding, is called a river that flows. It's right. constantly flowing, and there's an expanse of it, and a person can really only have pleasure in something when they understand what it is.
Right.
I'm going to take that back. You don't have to understand it. You just have to have pleasure with it. But, and then that flows to Gan, which Gan is Malchus, which is the bottom line where everything is. And specifically, it's specifically called Gan, as we say there, Gan Sidre Torah. There are 53, Nun Gimel, Gimel Nun, parshas in the Chumash. And that is the expression of this lower level of tainug, is to be immersed, you might say, in the Gan Parshias, the Gan Sidrei Torah, the 53 Parshas of the Torah. Mm-hmm. So that all happens on Shabbos. Masha Ein came to Davar Eser, which is not the case, which is something which is forbidden. Shein a Yachala Alus, you can't elevate it ever. even if a person ate it l'shem shemayim, even if he didn't know that it was usur. He thought he's eating kosher. Turns out he's not eating kosher. Guess what? It didn't get elevated. Mm. Even though he went and davened, it still doesn't get elevated. Lo b'Shabbos, lo b'Chol, doesn't matter if he made a cholent out of non-kosher meat. Goyin is helping, it's not going to help elevate it. Right. He says, even if the guy went and he davened with a hislavus, a fiery, flaming love for Hashem, yeah, it didn't elevate it.
No.
And he says, with the exception, and this is interesting, with the exception if a person ate it because if he would not have eaten it, he would have died. That if that be the case, then he says that, which is, I think he said different elsewhere. Then at that point he says, our sages say that it becomes absolutely 100% permitted.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's talking about over in Masechta Yuma, where they're talking about a person who is seized with what's referred to as a bulmus, not a B-U-L-L-M-O-O-S-E, right. But rather bulmus is a B-U-L-M-U-S, it's a Greek word, which means a ravenous hunger such that the person's eyes cloud over on a Yom Kippur. It says you could feed this person normal because this person is about to die. And we should be able to feed this person. So then in the same thing, since we're talking about eating when not appropriate things, which eating on Yom Kippur is because they're not appropriate, so it talks about, for example, the idea, the home remedy, if a person is bit by a rabid dog, so the home remedy method was, is you kill the dog and you eat a piece of its liver and that will cure the rabies. And there's a whole discussion about this, and the bottom line is you'd only be allowed to eat the dog's liver if it actually was a cure.
Right.
Yeah, it's getting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in getting.
It's in, okay, it could be there too, I don't remember. But I remember learning it in Yuma. So you guys just did get in Daf Yomi, so.
We're in Kedusha now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so there, the idea is that it becomes, if it's going to save this person's life, so then of course you could eat it. Okay, it talks about, you know, people ask me about this medication that's coated with a gelatin coating. And the gelatin is most likely animal. He says, what are you taking this stuff for? Well, I have a this and this, and I have to take the pills. Good, gesunte, hey, take the pill.
Exactly right.
You know, things used to come in, I don't know if things still come in capsules or not, but, you know, gelatin capsules. No problem, just you're taking it because it's
medicine.
It's medicine, it's not right. Food. You're not going to say a bracha on it. Even if those gelatin capsules tasted good.
You're not
those
putting people in gravy.
Yeah. True.
You're swallowing it, too.
Although you might have to, like, you know, fool yourself. Put it, like, stick it in a piece of cheese like you would with a dog or something like that. You know, then you'd be eating a broth on the cheese.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so then, he says, so then, at that point, then there's no negative ramifications to the eating the thing.
That's a different issue, right.
But listen, hopefully we will never have to experience
never know such
this.
A thing. Right, okay.
There's Baruch Shem Tov tells a story that either during World War II or just prior to, just during or after, he was in Samarkand, and there was no food. Mm. And his Malamed, who was basically in charge of taking care of these kids who had been shipped off, you know, away from the front so they could sit and learn and not be bothered by what's going on in the, what was for Russia, the Western Front.
Yeah.
So there was no food. Okay. There were people who starved to death in Samarkand and Tashkent.
Right.
And so the teacher came in and he came with a whole big plate of food. And he handed it out and he told the kids, he said, this is chazer. So this is pork. It says, you must eat it because otherwise you're going to starve. And the Torah says that you have to eat it. So it's 100% mutter for you to eat it. It's 100% permissible. But then the rabbi said, but don't lick your fingers. Okay, that's what he said. Okay, you got to eat it, but you know, you shouldn't understand it. This is pork. And then Beryl says, but he noticed that the rabbi didn't eat it.
Yeah.
Okay, he wasn't going to, he would rather starve than to eat the pork. But the kids, he made to eat the pork. Okay, but the idea was, this is, okay, you got to eat it, but don't feast
don't
on it.
Don't savor it.
Don't feast on it, yep.
Right.
Abba halim and b'teira. But when you're talking about, now those are the things themselves. Now back to the question. But when you're talking about limud hatera, when you're talking about learning Torah, what happens if I dribble milk into a stew and it gets mixed in? Av hilchas eser v'heter tumah v'tara sheheim hamishnayas v'habraisa sheva gemara u'poiskim. That we're talking about the laws of permitted and forbidden and permitted, impure and pure. That these are all the Mishnayos and the Brises, which are in the Gemara and the codes. Hamavarin, Amavarin, Divrehem, Lahalacha. That all of that now comes up to and it formulates into a halacha lamaisa. The Hain Gufi Torah Shabbal Peh. That's what the Torah, oral Torah is. Okay, so we can talk about this in a second. We'll take a break, Chris, here in a second. It says it's a very interesting thing. The Alter Rebbe wrote Shulchan Aruch. He wrote a Shulchan Aruch. Okay, initially it was 10 volumes, now it's like 4 volumes and a piece. Bit of two a other piece, volumes. Yeah. Yes. Okay, yeah, it's really
sad,
upset.
Sad to say.
If the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch would have existed on Yerideya, then I would probably never have opened up my big Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah.
What for? I mean, you know, but. Yeah, so the Alter Rebbe, you could learn Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, and familiarizing yourself with what he writes there, you would have a very good understanding of the halacha.
Yeah.
Given that is true, that's fine. That's how we learned the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch, and that's how we learned Shulchan Aruch in yeshiva. Mm-hmm. There was a set period of time when each day where we would devote to the study of various chapters of the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch. Mm-hmm. Okay. Kelil, the learning was different, because in yeshiva what we learned was we learned Gemara Le'il. We learned, we'd spend a week on a page of Gemara. Mm. The first day we would go through the Gemara Rashi Tesis, and then the rest of the week we would going into everything else.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that by Thursday, from Sunday to Thursday, we basically covered in two sides of a page of Gemara in tremendous depth. The Shulchan Aruch was like a breather to get your head like to loosen up a little bit after doing that all morning. So you'd learn Shulchan Aruch, learn an hour Shulchan Aruch. In Kelel, the learning was much different. They didn't learn Gemara Le'iyun. Gemara was learned as a side thing. We did Girsa. We just learned the Gemara, Rashi, Tosis, a little bit, you know, here and there, just to keep our heads into Gemara. But for the most part, what we would do is we'd, whoever it was who decided, would take a section in Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch and then give the footnotes from where the Alter Rebbe got his halachas from.
Right.
And we would work backwards, actually. What we would do is we would start with the Mishnah, the Gemara, the commentaries, just on that piece. It could be a piece of Gemara that was 5 lines long. It would be the whole thing. Okay, we once spent 6 weeks on the shape of an esrog in Kelel, and the amount that it takes up in Gemara is like less than a page.
Mm.
As to what an esrog should look like. Now we're talking about blemishes or anything. We had to pick when we said we wanted to learn something about esrog, so he divided, the Rosh Kelel said, well, there's this about this. There's like 6 different things you could learn about esrog. We decided we wanted to learn about the size, the shape of an esrog. Okay. So we start with the Gemara, and then go with the earlier commentaries, and then go with the later commentaries, then go with the earlier codifiers, then go with the later codifiers, and then wind up with the Shulchan Aruch. And then once now we got to the Alter Rebbe, it was like, ha-ha! It was like, wow! In that one paragraph, he managed to stick all that. Okay, so that's the modality of learning that Torah Shebal Peh is that we take it, so that it's called what's the expression in Aramaic? Learning the lesson according to halacha. To come up to halacha. In yeshiva, it was all theoretical. Everything was theoretical. But in Kailul already, they're thinking, listen, you got to go live in the world now. So we were learning according to how to do, to actually do
practical
things.
Practical life.
Okay, so it's but starting out from the very basic point and working up to it because it's all contained in there. As we see, we got to the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, he brought the whole thing in and put it into one paragraph. So I had a friend who wrote the Rebbe that he wanted to start translating Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch. This is 1985, 86. And he sent to the Rebbe the first chapter of Birchas Hanenin. And the Rebbe wrote back that a person who translates the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch has to have a Lashayne Zahav like the Alter Rebbe, has to have the golden tongue like the Alter Rebbe, like the Alter Rebbe had. That's what it refers to. They say that what's known in the Litvish Welt, in the Yeshivish world, is that the Alter Rebbe had a golden tongue,
yeah.
Because in one paragraph he's able to put all this stuff.
Right.
Okay? So my friend understood that to mean he shouldn't do it. You know, says, that's what you require, forget it.
Yeah.
So he had already worked up like 6-7 chapters out of the 8 chapters, or there were 12 chapters, whatever it is. And about 6 months later, he wrote in something for to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe asks, what's happening with the translation of the Shulchan Aruch?
Whoa.
He got busy. And he just did the Birchas Hanenin, and after that he stopped. And it's an amazing work that he did in English. So anyway,
when did he stop?
He had to go to work. But somebody else picked it up. There's the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch is existent, and I think the first volume Aleph is existent in 7 volumes. I think in English.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it any easier just because it's in English. I got news for you.
No, I know.
As it's brought down in the Zohar in innumerable references, Bereish Tikkunim, that I skipped a line, excuse me. Vehein hein gufi Torah shebal peh, shehu sfiras malchus d'atzilus. Okay, that this is the goof of the Torah. What is the Torah? If you had to put the Torah into GPS coordinates, you would put it at Malchus of Atzilus. As is brought down in, this flies in the face, you could say, what about Chachma? It's called Chachma Sever Etzenu Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, it depends what we're talking about. So if you're talking about Halacha L'maisa, so Maisa already means Malchus. Malchus means a final result. So learning in order to do is rooted in Malchus, in this case of Atzilus. As he says in many places, in Bereish Tikkunim, and it says at the beginning of Tikkunim, Malchus Peh Torah Shebal Peh Karin and Lay. It says Malchus is called the Torah Shebal Peh. Okay, we say that in Pasuk Eliyahu. And in Atzilus, everything is, even Hashem and his effects, are all one. Sha'or ain't saif, the higher Sha'or ain't saif, misyachid ba'atzilus betachlis ayichud. That means that the infiniteness of Hashem is united with Atzilus in an ultimate unity, and that would include also, by the way, Malchus of Atzilus, because Atzilus is called Olam Hayichud. It's the world which is united with Hashem. What part of it? All of it, even in the bottom of it.
Right.
And what is Malchus? Malchus is called the Peh. In one of the paradigms, you have the paradigm where you draw the sphere is like a person. So in one paradigm, the Malchus is the feet. In another paradigm, Malchus is the mouth. And it depends. Are you talking about action? Are you talking about speech? Okay, so, and if you're talking about speech, so now Malchus becomes the Peh, and what are we talking about? We're talking about Torah Shebal Peh. Okay, it's an interesting thing. It's not when we say, in English we call it learning by heart. There's an interesting story that Moshe Feller tells. that Moshe Feller went into the Rebbe back in the early 70s, I guess, with his young son, who at that time was young. Now he's not so young, but anyway, he's talking in the 70s. And it was somebody's birthday or something, and it was before Pesach. So he asked the kid if he knows the Manishtana Baal Peh. Okay? So the kid is like 3, 4 years old, whatever it is. The kid started saying what he knew Baal Peh. Okay? The next year he came back, and the Rebbe asked him, do you know the Manishtana by heart? And the kid said, yeah. And he started saying it. He says, after the Yechidus, Moshe Feller got a letter that he said, I wasn't asking your son the same question I asked last year.
Right.
Last year I asked if he knew it by mouth. This year I asked if he knew it by heart. Meaning, has he been able to put it into his heart?
Yeah.
Okay? Now,
right.
That, it's not that the Rebbe was picking on Mendy Feller.
No.
But rather, I guess if Mendy Feller has a big heart, I guess. But rather, the fact that this came out like this, it was an opportunity for the Rebbe to let all of us know, because Moshe Feller, every time he heard anything from the Rebbe, he was like jumping up and down. He's a very excitable person, he should live long and be well. And so we know the story, that it's not enough just to know it by mouth. You have to know it by heart as well.
Right.
As well. So it's called Teres Shebal Peh. Okay, when you say Teres Shebal Peh, whose mouth are we talking? We're talking Hashem's mouth. What's Hashem's mouth? Hashem's mouth is Malchus. As it says, Malchus, Teres Shebal Peh Yi Malchus. The Teres Shebal Peh is Malchus. So this is that's what it means, is what kind, what specifically? Okay, so it's the will and wisdom of Hashem. But the will and wisdom of Hashem is supposed to come down in Maisa, that every halacha is the will and wisdom of Hashem in concrete terms. That's what halacha is. The word halacha means the way to go. It's the clear path that Hashem has given us, like Rashi says at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, like a shulchan aruch, like a set table, which you have the fork where you need it, you have the water glass where you need it, and the plate is right there, and the serving dishes, and everything's all set out, the napkin just in the right place, all to facilitate your being able to get through the meal. So the halachas are also set out in such a way to facilitate us doing Hashem's will down here. This is where we're going to stop. We're on Kuf Mem Dalid. We're at Moshe Kosov Arizal, even though I've prepared for whatever, but I'm blabbermouthing over here. It's Kuf Mem Dalid, which is page 287, and the big words. And it's Rabbi Yitzchak Lurie of Blessed Memory in stating the Mishnayos is the English part to be continued.